Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
Hello, project people. Welcome back to a brand new episode and a final episode for 2023. It is good to have you with us. I can't believe it's the end of the year. Dale, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Val. I mean, we were just chatting before we hit record there, and geez, what a year it's been. A roller coaster of a ride. So much happening across the project landscape. I don't know why I said that in two words. It's one word. We know Martin's got COVID. I've been ill with a little. You're sick, so maybe it's just got to the head. It's that time of the year. It's silly season. But no, there's been lots happening. And, you know, I think it's probably that time of the year where we take a look back at what's happened, what's been discussed this year, and maybe a bit of a peek into the future and where we think things are going, because there's been some interesting trends from my perspective. I don't know about you, but there's been some unexpected, little quirks with, you know, AI and adoption rates, technology, not just AI. Also, huge stuff going out in the Middle East as well, so we can touch on that. The US market's interesting. Obviously, Oz market's interesting. UK market's interesting. We've got two wars going on. It's crazy. So, lots that can be discussed. But I don't know, where do you want to start?
It's been a hell of a year, Dale. And I think just a bit of a horizon scanning, as you said, which involves a bit of an understanding and interpretation from our perspective of what's really going on there. We've done a lot of traveling. We caught up with each other. We actually did an episode in the Middle East for the first time doing a podcast live, which was amazing. But just in general around the hecticness, I think everyone's feeling the pressure of 2023. And projects aren't necessarily doing any better, but we're doing some amazing things across the globe. I mean, I'm seeing a lot coming out of the Middle East, which you know about that, but also in the UK, Australia, everywhere else. So we can talk a little bit about our interpretations and maybe anecdotally our experiences and what's really driving projects today. And then I think we should get into some detail because we love talking about tech. We even ran some of our own surveys, didn't we, on LinkedIn around various new emerging tech. The buzzword, dare I say it, AI and GPT. They've had their own drama this year. But where do you want to start, Dale? I'm happy to start anywhere with you.
I think if we first look back and just off the top of our heads, we haven't done any analytics, so to speak, on the season seven. And if you look across a lot of it, I think two key, areas or focus areas come out for me is one is technology and what is out there. But the other one, there were a lot of stories, life stories of people's career journeys and where they've been. And from that, I think we can take that a lot of what we're trying to do specifically for those that are sort of, you know, at the post, I guess, of retiring. And they're saying, you know, a lot of this we've done before, we've tried to do before. So don't try and reinvent the wheel. Just look back on lessons learned from the past. We're just not looking far back enough or wide enough. With a technology piece, I think it's a place of curiosity for a lot of the people that we spoke to, but caution as well. So that's looking back at the people we spoke to this year. Some outliers, which were really, really interesting. For me, certainly, one of them you missed was Owen Condren's episode 170 on cement. Now, I said this to Owen afterwards, I genuinely did not think that cement could be that interesting and that we'd run out of time in our long-form podcast to talk about cement. But go check that one out. I'd like to single that one out. But that's just to look back, just to give us a bit of a flavor of what's been happening in terms of the podcast and what people have been talking about and the themes. So that's the first place I'd like to just look back on and go, does that tell us anything about the year and projects in general. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, and just to summarize the singing theme, and probably the best podcast, or at least the most popular podcast we had in 23 was with Alan Mosker about AI. And no doubt that AI has, what I would say, hit critical mass in terms of awareness. How to use it properly is probably an interesting conversation we'll have a bit later. But it's been a bit of a ride. I mean, we've had all sorts of topics that have been interesting for our listeners, and it's great to see that the podcast itself is getting traction. I think with a lot of people returning back to work and they're commuting back to the offices now, we're getting away from working from home, at least in Australia. I'm not sure what the UK is like. But I think that's a trigger for people to actually listen to while they're commuting different podcasts and information. So we're getting a lot more of a spread, which is great, because I think some of the topics we've been talking about don't just cover the technical and the geeky, but we talk about the leaderships and the behaviors and the barriers of entering the project profession. And I think that's sometimes an interesting conversation, because a lot of people who listen to our podcast don't go back to the original, you know, first 10 episodes, thank God. Yep. They start, you know, in episode 140, 150, 160. I can't believe we're past 170 episodes, Dale. Can you?
I can't either. I mean, I remember when we started this, we've said it before in previous episodes. So those that have been listening to us for a few years, forgive us for repeating the story, but we were in our cars because it was during pandemic when it was lockdown. So you had no space, right? Your entire family, you didn't want to wake the kids up. So we used to go into our cars and record close enough so we could get the Wi-Fi signal off of our phones and laptops, off of the worst microphones, and we never ever thought we'd get you. But thank you to everyone that does listen, follow, support, subscribe, and of course to our sponsors and our guests. But just picking up on what you were saying there, I think if I look back on season 7 specifically and people listening to it and some of the feedback we've been getting, I think sometimes that you and I are in this echo chamber, because we're talking to people that are at the forefront of being curious, trying technology, not just with tech, trying new techniques in project management, trying old techniques in project management in different ways. And I feel like there's very few, or not very few, there's fewer than we think that are actually trying out these techniques and new cool tools and things like that. That's my feeling. I mean, we've got some sample stats that we put out on polls and things like that that we could potentially talk about. But do you get the same sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think what is also happening is this gap in the, and I won't say institutions, but I will, institutions and academic libraries of information. We seem to have a gap between education and the practical field, where technology now is forcing us to have to learn. But there is so much that is changing that is effectively flipping education on its head, and we need a new way of learning, or at least keeping up to date. And that's not saying that we need to learn everything, but even in our own defined fields, and I had a few sessions with staff, you know, just talking about how do you get ahead now in project management when there are so many tools available. So we're getting to a point where decision fatigue is probably going to be a problem. Which tool do you pick for which environment? Which one is the most practical? Which one is the most proven? And arguably, the science and the information has not caught up on what's the best method anymore. What we do know is projects still aren't delivering on time, on budget, on cost. Can we do anything about how we change that, or turn the dial or move the dial with technology? What's your view on that, Dale?
I think you're right. You know, with all the craziness happening and people, I guess, after the pandemic getting used to getting back into the office and site and things like that, I think we've lost a bit of time in our day. And what's taken an impact is the learning and development time. The time to, you know, as you say, on if you're commuting in, you can listen to a podcast, right? You could read a book. But I do think there is this element of, okay, now I've got to, maybe I'm driving and I can't actually do my MBA, or I can't go and work on a tool, right? So on ChatGPT Plus or Bard that, you know, is backed by Gemini or Copilot, or, you know, a cool tool from, you know, Nodes and Links or Nplan or anyone else out there that's, you know, allowing people to test their tools. So I think that bit is lost because you can't always play. You don't have your playground anymore. And I think we need to head into the new year consciously ring fencing time in our week to play with the tools that are there, because if we don't know what they do and we don't know what they're capable of, we tend to put them in the too difficult box for someone else to tell us. And then usually the people that are telling us are either people we don't really know, so they can't relate to us, or potentially they're salespeople, and you just feel like you're being sold to, when actually there's some truth behind what that salesperson is telling you, but you actually just don't know because you don't have the time to play with it. I don't know. It's a fascinating one. I don't know where I'm going with this really, but it's just, I think, make time for yourself so you can keep up to speed with what is out there.
Yeah. And I think there is some disruption to the market with most of the big players, the Facebooks, et cetera, the Microsofts, offering the training for free. So you can go out there and effectively self-study a lot of these things. What's difficult for people to grasp is that, you know, you don't need permission anymore to be an expert in anything. You relatively have accessed everything you need to learn everything you need. And so the gumption is actually on the individual now, not the team, not the company, not the project. It's on the individual to decide how they want to structure. And maybe this is a good time to talk about it, because 24 is coming. People are thinking about New Year's resolutions. How's next year going to be? They're probably thinking about career switching or upskilling or whatever it is going to be. My argument is does this make the degree relatively less value in the market, because the skills we actually need are probably sound bites of various different types of systems, tools, methods, and approaches? And does it mean that we need to then just have a library of what's possible, and you select the various things you need and you make up your own kind of, I guess, self-determined degree, rather than going to an institution to tell you what you need to study? Are we getting to that point yet? What do you think, Dale?
Yeah, I don't know about you, Val, but when I interview people these days, I don't pay too much attention on their formal education anymore.
Why is that?
And I think a lot of people, just because I don't think it's valid. I just don't think it's valid anymore. Genuinely, I look at experience first and foremost. What have they done? What have they actually done? And to borrow, you know, Paul Guge's sort of statement, if you will, or he's saying, is it, you know, 1 year repeated 10 times, or is it actually 10 years of varied experience that they've got? So do they have that breadth and depth? But also, for me, it's the attitude and behavior. Are they, regardless of age or experience, are they curious? Do they have the attitude of wanting to learn, wanting to grow, you know, the right types of behaviors that you want? And yes, formal education proves that you can read something, regurgitate it, potentially understand it as well. But I don't know if it allows me to judge if someone can apply it practically.
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you still consider formal education?
No, I mean, I think...
And don't get me wrong. Both of us have got our degrees and our masters, right? So we're not saying it's rubbish, but
No, and I think what I tend to, because I was a later, so I dropped out of school, but I ended up going back to uni to do degrees later. What I realized was it was just more confirmation of what I already knew, and the certificate gave me validation. But, you know, if you look at the cost to formal education versus the cost of experience, I would rather pick someone who's been in the field for 10 years than someone who's done a degree for 10 years. So, you know, it's because not necessarily a degree isn't useful, because I think it is. I just think experience is more useful first. I think it's better to go out there and fumble and make mistakes and figure it out first on a project, then go back for formal qualifications, because then you can go, aha. If you go the other way around, you have this pretense and almost like this arrogance of like, you know how it works before you go into the field. It's not like being a medical doctor where you have to have prerequisites of what's happening, right? You need to know about the anatomical figure of a person. You need to understand how things work. Projects aren't like that, because as we know, projects are different, and you will learn a lot more from being out there with the field guys, being on site with guys that have been there for a long time. There's this offerance of learning that is kind of passed down. It's almost tribal in a way. And you learn more from these guys that have been on projects for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years than you would in any classroom that I've ever seen. And so there is something to that, but I think that there is a disparity between, you know, and Elon Musk talks about this. I brought him up again, but, you know, there's too many MBAs in the world. And the problem with that is it kind of gives you this false sense of security or confidence in projects, and somehow that's going to fix the projects because, again, fundamentally, they are based on rules and methodologies that we know don't work because, according to the statistics, projects aren't delivering successfully. So, ergo, if any of those degrees meant anything, we would have some kind of correlation between successful outcomes, which we don't. And that's largely because projects are people-driven, which means they are fundamentally emotional to some degree. And the only challenge we really have now, I think this is an easy one, is how do we get real-time information to make informed decisions and base all of that in some type of system that can be iteratively improved? And I think we're getting there. And what might be interesting is the barrier of entry isn't the problem. It's the barrier of acceptance that technology is taking over. So I think people don't want it to happen because it means that we fundamentally are not in charge of everything. It does reduce jobs, but I think it takes away from some of these controlling jobs. For example, we've had experiences in the past where people don't want the truth out on projects. Now, this happens all the time in all sorts of projects, and leadership don't like to be embarrassed, and so they may change figures, project different figures, and so you end up with multiple baselines or multiple versions of the truth, which is a bad idea, but it happens. It might be between a contractor and a client because of the relationship. It might just be because the definitions change over time and you want to capture different information, but ultimately, there is a barrier of acceptance at leadership to say, you know what, we should have the objective truth, even if it's painful, even if it hurts, even if it makes me look bad, and we should make decisions on that. And I actually find that's where we're at. There's this buffering of the truth, which is happening in society as well. I don't know how you feel about that point, but I can kind of sense this, you know, invisible force.
I was about to say your favorite bent. Flivberg, who you've been trying to get on the podcast for a while, I think he calls it in his book, he gives it a fancy name, strategic misrepresentation, right? Which is basically, if you boil it down, lying, right? So those in authority, right, at senior strategic level, lie about where project outcomes would be based on data they have in order to ensure that the project goes ahead. Now, some might say, well, that's great because the project would never go ahead. But should it? If it's starting on a lie, should it go ahead? Right? Mm-hmm. In the first place. Which is an interesting one because if we are outcome-based and we starting a project off on a fake news, shall we call it, strategic misrepresentation, then you're never going to, by definition, you're not going to get the outcomes, right? You can't. I don't see how you can. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's how do we fix it? It's a tough one. It's a tough nut to crack, I think. It's a tough nut to crack. I mean, if we take it down, if we peel it back a bit, and we let's just take ChatGPT because that's been the one for this year, right? This year, ChatGPT is 1 year old. There's been lots happened over the year with it. Yet we put out a simple poll. It's only a few days old, but we got quite a few responses already. And half of the people, the question was, does ChatGPT make a difference to or improve project management? And half of the people said, no, it doesn't. But half of the people that said no had never used it.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us?
It's almost like go. Tell me what you're going to say.
I was going to say you've used ChatGPT extensively along with a lot of the other AI tools out there. You've spoken to lots of individuals that have used it as well. And do you have any themes that have come out of those conversations or people that you know that are using the likes of ChatGPT, if we just boil it down to one specific bit of tech that everyone is aware of but are making judgments on without using it to its full potential.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a blanket. It's almost like active dissonance. We kind of separate ourselves from things based on either the mass projection or media projection of what things are, the perception of things, and we don't seem to go a layer down or two layers down. You know, my feedback is that we've lost somewhat of the nature of being curious. I almost feel like it's the scientific inquiry or the scientific inquirer type mindset where you're like, oh, it's interesting. How does this work? What does it do? How could it be helpful? And practical applications of it, and then testing to see if it's wrong. And shout out to Lawrence Roland, who we'll have on next year about ChatGPT and how it's useful for projects. But the stats are pretty interesting. So for me, it's less about whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whether it's a good tool, whether it's a bad tool. I think those are subjective. What is objective is that anyone can pick up anything now, any technology tool, a smart tool, let's call it a, I don't even think AI is the right term, but can play around in their own sandpit. And I think you said it really well. People need to slice off a part of their week and spend some time either discovering themselves, discovering others, or discovering tool sets or methods that improve their professional practitioner lifestyle. You know, if you're taking this project practitioner as a career, your job as a practitioner is to always be practicing. And so when we think about practitioners, it's almost like a static subset of a certificate, right? They go, well, I got my chartered professional certificate, or I got my PMP. Therefore, the only thing I really need to do is maintain my PDUs. But they don't go above and beyond the horizons. And so we're talking about horizon scans. And arguably, definitively, if you are not looking at technology, you should be very concerned about the type of role you might have in the future. And so a lot of people think that value is based on roles, but it's not, right? In terms of like your remuneration, your salary package, your options, all of that stuff, it's based on your value and what you can bring to the table. So if you are a novice at a lot of things, but you have a technical grounding, you can do very, very well. But if you kind of blindside yourself from technology, and this is, I think, what's happening in the market is some people are trying and some people are avoiding. That avoidant behavior, which is interesting, is going to hurt you later on because you're going to have a massive learning curve because these tools won't go away. It's already hit the what I call the mass market. People are exploring, they're trying new things on. The other thing I would say as well is I think we're getting to a point where there's going to be a generational change in the leadership structure. So we're kind of moving away from the baby boomers and we're going to have a massive interesting change in the way people and projects are managed because the next generation aren't like the previous. And, you know, just from my experience, that younger generation, the X's, the Y's, the millennials, they're going to have a different view on one, culture, two, honesty, because they are way more socially aware than we are. They are more considerate, I think, on general, and they seem to have a more caring and understanding of sustainability, the environment, etc. So kind of peripheral impacts of projects, if you think about it that way. So therefore, understandably, they're going to want to do things a bit more efficient, a lot more balanced. The structures will be a lot more flattened. What will be interesting from my perspective is how much of that will they adopt in terms of new ways of working? And I think just to finish that conversation off, I think the two things that I'm 100% certain on that will be disrupted the first will be planning and risk, 100%. And I think by just general outcomes, it'll be reporting as well. But the things from a practitioner perspective, if I was in these two fields that I'd want everyone on the call to and listen to is definitely, if you're a planner, you should be definitely looking at this. And if you're in risk, you should definitely look at this. And we had some episodes actually this year with Jesse Schilling and co. We also had a few other talks about project controls in general, where there may be some interest around, you know, I think, QSing and cost. But I do think there is some massive disruptions coming in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think project reporting is already disrupted.
Absolutely.
It may not have reached your shores yet, but it's already disrupted. And if you want to know more, reach out to myself and Val, and we can show you exactly how easily it is being disrupted. I tend to agree. I think risk is the low-hanging fruit, right? Risk is, it is, it's low hanging fruit for AI. If I was AI and I was looking around at project controls or project management, like, oh, Risk, I got you. You're the low hanging fruit. But yeah, planning certainly, if you think about, you're still going to need someone to vet the plan and go, that makes sense.
100%.
I think it's important to state for those listening that you're not saying this is going to replace people on projects. You're saying it's going to replace jobs, which is different, right? Roles. It's going to replace roles. It's going to evolve roles. And I think this is where you've said it before, right? If you know that a computer could do your job, then guess what? It will do your job. So your value add, therefore, is not actually doing what the computer can do, but it's validating, adding to, and understanding the output from the computer, right? So if you can look at what a computer generated and given you and add your experience, knowledge, skill to that, and all of the context that goes around. Because let's face it, right? Yes, we've got amazing tech out there, but we don't have tech right now. It can be done, but that has the full context of the entire project, right? And takes all considerations, everything from environmental factors to contractual frameworks, yeah? And capabilities of resources, supply chain, yada, yada, yada. We don't have that data all in one space, but we're trying to do that collectively as a collective profession. We're trying to do that. And so your value add as a professional therefore becomes, okay, if I can take what this computer has generated and go, yes, that makes sense, or no, it doesn't, and here is why, guess what? That is where you will add your value rather than looking to fill a particular role. But I also want to spend a little bit of time, because as we were saying earlier, that we've both of us are on this podcast, the two of us have been on aeroplanes and ventured in different parts of the world. When you scan the horizon geographically, are there any particular trends that you're seeing or themes that are coming out of the various geographical locations? I mean, there's certainly for me, when I look at, I guess, the UK, there seems to be a lot of pressure on projects, particularly in terms of the cost pressures, right? And I think we said this during the pandemic, Val. So I don't know which episodes it would be, but it's two or three seasons ago. We recognized that governments around the globe, because of lockdowns, etc., were pumping a whole lot of money into infrastructure projects, because economics tells you that you keep economic growth happening by pumping money, right, into the public sector. And so that's what they did. But what it did do as well, it created a huge demand for project professionals. And so when you have that huge demand and supply is pretty low, you get people in roles that they're not qualified to be in. And we predicted, I remember this, we predicted that, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, you'd have a whole bunch of fucked up projects that need fixing. Guess where we are now?
Mm-hmm.
And so you see the likes of HS2 Phase 2 getting canned, right, by the Prime Minister. You see a lot of other projects in trouble because they've had people in posts that were never meant to be there. And so that's one of the themes I'm seeing coming out of this year, particularly in the UK, that a lot of projects are in trouble and they need fixing. That wasn't the case the same time last year. This time last year, it was great. Projects were going fantastically well. There's a lot of money available. It was going full steam ahead. Now there's a lot of projects in trouble. What are you seeing in Oz? Let's start in Oz.
Yeah, well, we had the same challenge with pretty much an unfathomable amount of infrastructure and transport projects, which we knew we couldn't deliver. The other thing that happened is barriers were closed off and boundaries and so people and immigration was stopped. So we already had a massive capacity problem to deliver the projects on the East Coast at least. And that was compounded by COVID, but also that we had what I call, we have a massive problem with big four consultancies and big government agencies. Thousands and thousands of people are relying on government jobs. And I almost compare it to social welfare. We're paying people to just sit around and do the same thing on the other side rather than paying consultants and contractors to do the job that they're paid for. So we weren't really outcome focused. We were effectively keeping everyone afloat because the same kind of suspended animation, I call it. We knew that they would come when they'd run out of money. And the same issue we've got, every single project is almost delayed. That's not to say that they're not doing a great job. There's a lot of hard work being put into these projects, but it's certainly stepped us back in terms of these projects actually delaying the portfolio. So these projects, because they're overrun, means that future projects can't be spent on. And that means, you know, important projects like in Melbourne, we don't have an airport rail. That's been slowed down. We've had other projects being cancelled, like Geelong Fast Rail. So it's had a massive impact locally. We also had the Commonwealth Games cancelled. I don't know if you've read about that, because there was just no funds. So even pulling out of the Commonwealth Games, I think it was like a $300 million or $600 million fine for the government. So there are these kind of repercussions of projects now because they're so large that if they have an economic status, and I actually think there's some equivalency to GDP output, right? So I know they're actually related to outputs now, not necessarily just measured on their own. When the validity of projects, it used to just be, well, we're going to fix a bridge or we're going to fix a road or we're going to fix a track. Now these projects are like super infrastructure projects. They're building things that weren't there before. And with them, they're trying to build them all at the same time. And so we have this conflated issue of multiple things. And COVID just didn't help, right? It was just in the middle. And particularly in Melbourne, Victoria, the entire state was locked down. So not only could you not do those projects, you couldn't work on them at all. And so it's really kind of deflated the Victorian state in particular, probably the worst in Australia in terms of performance. But it's deflated people as well morally. I think people on projects are now moving overseas, that you're seeing a big influx of career changing and movements. Even outside of the project sphere, people are deciding actually projects aren't for me and they're doing something else. So I've seen a lot of people move in various directions, but the people that are sticking in projects are just kind of saying, WTF, we kind of knew this was happening. And it comes back to my point around, you know, or your point as well, that strategic misrepresentation, if we use Bent's terms. An optimistic bias is probably the second one he talks about, because we think we, in the short term, we think we can do a lot. In the long term, we seem to be, you know, less optimistic. But I think we need to flip that switch somehow. And that comes with leadership. So maybe the change of hands or the change of guard in terms of the leadership structure might then give us a little more courage, a little bit more bravery to say, no, that's not actually possible. Because at the moment, we've been in this political environment where we've been keeping the weather station. You know, it's always sunny. There's no clouds in the sky until the last minute. And you can't, you can't support that. You can't say the last minute you had no idea. Everyone in project controls and planning and risk will tell you, they've been telling you for months, maybe even years, there's something wrong. Hey, we're flagging things. And what happens is it gets actively ignored. That's a form of negligence. And it comes back down to another one called a lack of accountability. So when it comes to leadership, that lack of accountability, because people are worried, scared about their jobs, whatever it is. I'm not just seeing that here in Australia. I'm seeing that everywhere I go. Middle East is the same. So there is a concern that that we will never get on top of projects until we get the right leadership in place. And then to support that right leadership, I think technology will give us the massive boost in terms of what's happening in the site or on the site or in the field or whatever it is, that then, you know, courageous leaders can make informed decisions. That's where we need to get to. And it's, I would say it's system agnostic, it's methodology agnostic, and to a degree it's people agnostic, because 90% of what we do on projects is rules-based anyway. You talk about progress, talk about cost, talk about planning, talk about risk. They're all business rules. So unless we're doing something fundamentally different, which is where we need a slice of time of our week away to think the biggest commodity we have in the future from horizon scanning is actually imagination or creativity. You know, maybe we should be getting people in with liberal arts degrees or artistic people or neurodivergent people or people who think differently. Maybe that's what we need. And when we talk about diversity, this is the other thing I've got a problem with. We talk about diversity, we think about gender inequality, we think about different races, which is apparent. Why don't we think about diversity of thought? Because that's where it's a little bit harder to measure. But if I have a whole room of people who think the same as I do, we're going to fall into the same trap of think or groupthink, where everyone thinks the same or everyone's too worried to make anyone offended. We end up in the same position, just with a different set of rules. So I think that's the other thing that I'll be cautioning everyone from my perspective, just horizon scanning, nothing else. But I think that's an interesting point as well.
So interestingly, if we go back from geographically to topics and trends, if you look back last year, 22, a lot was being spoken about in diversity, leadership, not just on the podcast, but at various seminars and women in this and, you know, women in project management. And particularly, I'm not trying to single out women. I'm just saying a lot of focus has been placed on diversity. This year, it hasn't really come up. So either one of two things have happened, I think. Either we've cracked it or people are bored of it because actually it doesn't work. Like, don't try and focus on stats, right? Focus on, as you say, diversity of thought, because do you have people with varied experience, enough varied experience at the table to appreciate and deliver projects?
Yeah.
I think it is important. So diversity is one, but the other one that has been spoken a lot in previous seasons has also been net zero and carbon, which hasn't been as high of a topic or a theme this year, I think, from my perspective. Now, I know we haven't cracked that one. Why is that, though? Is it just that it's not cool anymore, that the honeymoon period's worn off?
Yeah, anything from this point on in the podcast is going to be speculative, but my gut feel tells me people are sick of notions of inclusivity when it excludes people. I think that is actively going on, and that's because, you know, when you have KPIs or targets, companies will do anything they can to hit their targets because they're incentivized. And sometimes that incentivization can make people do things that are not ethical or morally correct in a sense, right? And we've seen that. And we've seen that in history. We've seen that on projects, people trying to find shortcuts to do things. So if you need a quota of X, you tend to make that quota happen regardless, right? And there are books on this, like Lying with Statistics. There's easy ways to skew market data. You know, people just have – sometimes they have self-interest at the core of their lives, right? They are the only thing that they care about. And that personality type is problematic because it's everywhere. The second point around kind of the greenscape, I think one, it seems unfeasible what's being projected out there. Like, everything's going to go green. In Victoria, they said no new houses will be provided with gas. So we're all going to go electric. But the only way to produce electricity in Australia is coal at mass quantities, right? We're talking the entire population, not just some areas. So I think what people are becoming aware of is feasibility and practicality. You know, not everyone can have an EV car. We're seeing also the repercussions of that across the world, like how they mine for cobalt and the responsibility of that. The slave labor of kids in mines and all that kind of stuff.
Not actually as green and sustainable as we like to believe they are.
No, so there's not a one pill solution. But we can accept that the environment is impacted by humans. I don't think anyone with an education would say that's a problem. That's not true. I think it is true. Whether it's to the degree that some of the scientists are explaining and whether or not we should completely go green are up for debate, right? And I think a lot of people are on the fence because the information is blurred. And unfortunately, the internet is a massive problem because it provides you with everything you could think of. I love it, but it's hard for someone. And I actually, because we've got kids, right? I'll tell you this. How do you critically think in a world where information is pushed to you, not pulled? So you can have almost any kind of dystopian theory out there. And how do you make sense of the truth versus not the truth? And this is the same problem I think we all have with AI, is the rational thought, the critical thought is, yes, okay, so you've got this AI. And a lot of the responses back from AI chatbots and OpenAI is that, well, if you feed in bullshit, it just regurgitates bullshit. I said, well, that's the internet as well. That's also how people are. So, you know, you could say the same thing about everything on the internet. And now people are struggling because they don't trust government. The fundamentals of trust are kind of broken, and they're blurred and they're disturbed. So we have media, which is not being trusted, is probably at an all-time low for most Western countries, I would say. We have governments that are trusted is at an all-time low since COVID. We have, you know, those interrelations between projects and people and politics is just getting a bit restless. And so people are concerned about what they're feeding themselves. And then the added compound of that is it all looks real, you know. It all sounds feasible or practical or concerning. So there are these challenges with misinformation and disinformation that we're struggling with on projects as well. You know, this is part of that whole blatant misrepresentation, or what I call just omissions with intent, right? And so when it comes to things like sustainability, arguably, yeah, there's some pretty good case studies for both sides to say, or use cases to say that that maybe it's not as dire as it should be, or maybe the solutions they're putting in place aren't practical enough. And we've got some pretty amazing aspiring projects in the Middle East that you could argue are not practical or feasible. I mean, they are going ahead, but when you look on the ground, the scale and magnitude of some of these projects is a huge challenge, especially when they're trying to deliver them with some level of sustainability. So that could be an issue too. But yeah, it's a mixed bag out there. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you were chatting about politics, and I was thinking, at one stage in the world, we had Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and Mandela all at the same time, you know, as world leaders to look up to. I don't think we have anyone in that ilk, that vein anymore. Right now,
yeah,
I certainly, for me, I don't see anyone, you know. So if we don't have world leaders that have the values, that have the ingredients to lead on the world stage, you know, then that permeates all the way down through various countries, states, cultures, etc. And maybe I just haven't come across these leaders. Maybe you're in a country listening to this and you go, yep, your leader's like one of those. Let us know. But I think it is, you know, what's the old saying, Val? Is it the fish rots from the top? Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's exactly true for organizations and projects as well. And so if project leaders don't have leaders to look up to, then where are they seeking their guidance from? And it's not a new topic, leadership. It's been spoken about lots in the past. I just still don't know if we're doing enough to educate, to arm our project leaders with the right tools to deliver projects. And maybe that's because we can't keep up with the pace and rate of change that projects are going through. Maybe we're just not thinking about it enough. You know, but leadership certainly is key, not only because it allows people to galvanize together and try and drive to a shared outcome, but it also gives people a real sense of direction and belonging on the outcome. And as you alluded to, with the new generations coming in, that's what people are looking for. You talk about people, you know, shifting out of project controls, and I don't necessarily think that's just because of how projects are going. I think that's a generational thing as well. And people will shift if they don't feel that projects are giving them what they need. And I think we'll see people leave, we'll see people come in. And I don't think leaders are equipped with that churn rate. And I think the more we talk about it and the more we point it out, maybe those future leaders listening to us would think about it a bit more. I don't know. But yes, leadership certainly is something I think that still needs to be spoken about. And also, as much as the tech is advancing, the people side of projects needs to be spoken about still continuously. Because if we are to get new people into projects, if we are to lose people out of the project profession, we have to be talking about the people that are delivering projects and how to best support them, how to best give them the tools necessary to deliver the projects, and how to give them a fulfillment, job satisfaction, career progression, personal development, all the good things that we know should go with it, how we are doing that whilst delivering projects. So yeah, really, really important topics. But hey, look, we've been just going all over the shop about, I guess, the past year or so and the present for about 3/4 of an hour. And we've touched a little bit on the future, but if we are to do horizon scanning and look at the trends and, you know, put our heads above the parapets and say, well, what's next year going to bring? Where would you start?
Well, if we're keeping it locale to projects, then I think the first thing that's going to definitely happen is I think the whole premise of SaaS companies, you know, software as a service, because when they say software as a service, they mean a product as a service. They don't mean a software.
Yeah.
They mean you are locked into a license agreement with one product. And usually if you want more of those products, it's within the suite of products. So it might be suite as a service. But anyway, I actually think that's going to start to break down when the barriers to develop your own stuff in-house will be so easy, low code or no code. Anyone in the project controls and the project technical profession will be able to build tailor-made products at speed relatively quickly. And I think that the novice of that is, if you want to see what that looks like, have a look at what Microsoft are doing. Now, if Microsoft are leading, they have the biggest market share in terms of usability. Their systems and tools have the lowest barrier of learning and entry and access. So things like Excel, PowerPoint, almost email, Outlook, you know, they're mostly used by most businesses around the world. Teams is fast, obviously becoming the thing that everyone uses, but they're rolling out new things as well. So if that's a kind of predetermination of what the platforms are going to look like, the other software tools and companies will do the same thing. Now, the reason why Microsoft is different, not only because they have the partnership with OpenAI, but if you can read the horizon, what they've done is effectively dissolved some of the IT components back into the business. So now you are in charge of your own data lakes. You can create your own databases. You can access your own IDM. You can manage your own Active Directory. A lot of that stuff used to be isolated to IT. That's all sitting now with the business side of the venture, right? So that used to be split. The other thing is insights and capabilities are all provided with no code or low code. And that means that anyone can learn it and anyone can become an administrator of the technical parts. So it then means then, well, okay, so let's make that the blanket statement. Well, why do I need, I don't know, a scheduling tool when all the business rules are sitting in the Microsoft suite and I can integrate everything else that I'm thinking about using Power Apps, Power Automate, Power Flow, the Powerbase platform, whatever it is. I can use Microsoft Fabric. I can use Loop. I can use Viva. So anyone who has not heard any of those tool sets is really not really scratching the surface in Microsoft. That's just one platform. I would see a lot of the new products that come on board over the next couple of years will be doing the same thing. They'll be going, actually, we're going to give the power to the user. And it would come at such a price and such a easy access, i.e. no code, no real certifications required, that you'll be able to build up anything. And remember, we had this conversation with Dan Patterson, and we said it's going to be like you have a white screen, blank canvas, and you would just effectively prompt it to say, and I think it'd be something like this. So step one, ingest my project documentation. Now turn all of that into a program of work, a project plan, a risk profile, give me all the platforms I need, configure everything I need, you know, everything.
Can I stop?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'd say the first step would be create my program documentation.
It could.
Rather than testing it. You're talking about projects in delivery. I'm talking about new projects.
Well, I'm assuming that there was a bid project, which is actually a problem in itself, right? But yeah, exactly. So you could even go way earlier that it could even be the client, and then the client augments itself as part of the project team, right? So you don't actually have contractors. You have people that become co-located who are part of the clientele. They're just split off as an entity. But it's a joint entity between the client, so you get better relations. But I do think that effectively all processes, and there's a thing in Microsoft called process mining, which can automate processes automatically and auto-configure them based on what you feed it. You're going to get to a point where a lot of the transactional work to set up or execute or monitor and control projects will be a standard tailored to your project based on AI. And that should be, theoretically, that's benchmarked information because AI is using your data plus project management data in the LLM. And I think it's going to get to past the point where if you want, you can just have LLMs related to your business. So you could have proprietary LLMs, but I think most people are open to the fact that everything should be open. And I think IP is probably going to be the biggest challenge. I'm not sure how you're going to manage intellectual property in a world where everything is shared and integrated. So that might be something of a competitive problem for most of these SaaS companies or even some of these big construction companies which have these novel systems and platforms. But if they do get past that, then the advantages are going to be massive and the speed is going to be huge. The difference will be definitely, you know, maybe a third of the workforce to execute a mega project as it is today.
Maybe IP is outdated as well, the concept of IP, intellectual property. Because let's face it, everything we know is just learned from people that have come before us. So is it their property that we've, our intellect? But let's not go down that rabbit hole. Can I add to what you were saying in terms of horizon scanning to the future? I agree with you with all of the tech stuff. I think that one of the big challenges for next year will be capability and expertise shortages, particularly amongst the developed nations like the UK, Australia, US, etc. I say this because the Middle East, and you've been out there a few times as well, is going to be absolutely massive next year.
Yeah.
And that creates a huge demand. We know that people will be going there, particularly those that are the most experienced, the most capable, will be going out there. And that is a brain drain on all of the other countries and states. And so I think that's going to be a huge, huge challenge for us as a global community, is how we deliver projects across the globe when the nucleus of expertise is in a single location, because that's where the demand is highest and the remuneration, but not only the remuneration, but being part of something really amazing and once in a lifetime exists.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I don't know if you share that view or not, but that's really the challenge.
Yeah, if you're talking about the brain drain, that's definitely real. They haven't really even scratched the surface of the number and velocity of projects, the speed at which these need to be built, and just the resource drain on the world will be huge. Now, probably the thing that's working against them is not everyone wants to move to the Middle East, which the way they are set up at the moment is they want resources in country. That they may change that based on technology access, you know, as they get, I guess, more accompanied or accustomed to sharing with the West. Obviously, it's relatively fresh at the moment, particularly in Saudi. But what they have planned for the region is transformative. It's not even you know, on the spectrum in terms of the project size. I think a lot of people just see the marketing and they think, oh, yeah, that's interesting, probably never be done. But they are actually building these things. And we've been on the ground firsthand to see some of the work that's happening. So I think you're right. And that may actually force, because I think scarcity drives some of the innovations anyway. So where we have a drain on resources in the West, like the UK, Australia, we're going to have to come up with novel ideas. And that's the breeding ground for innovative creativity to go, okay, we don't have 50 people to put on this project. We need to do something fundamentally different to get the same outcome. And that might produce some really innovative tech or some process or methodology or different ways of organizing our people. So I'm hopefully optimistic about what that might mean for the West in terms of how they structure these big projects, or at least plan them. Perhaps that's the way to say it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a fascinating year, I think, no doubt. I mean, I was just looking through, Val. You know, did you know this? So for next season, we've already got guests booked up until May.
Incredible.
And there's some really, really interesting folks in the new year. You mentioned Lawrence to kick off the new season, new year. It's going to be absolutely amazing from a Project Chatter perspective. It's going to be year 5 next year for us and season 8. Do you want to do a bit of horizon scanning on Project Chatter for next year?
Absolutely. Well, look, I think, you know, the community has been fantastic. We've always appreciated our sponsors, supporters, fans, followers, but you know, what we'd really love is more Q&A, more interaction with the community. I mean, you guys tell us what you want to hear, because we would love to have the guests, the heroes, the idols, the specialists, the scientists, whoever you think could add value to us interviewing and speaking with. But there's just definitely going to be a theme around tech. There's definitely going to be a theme around mega projects. And there's always a theme around leadership. So I think they're the three big things I probably see in the next year. But I also think that we're probably going to have a lot of spin-offs. So we've obviously got another little podcast kicking off next year, which I'll make a little plug for right now, which is the Gen AI podcast, which is just talking about the AI. So it's proper geek speak, but a lot of fun as well, because we bring it to a surface and an understanding that everyone can relate to. And that's with our friends, Greg Lawton and Alan Mosca. So do check out that one. But I do think, like, Project Chatter has evolved over the last...
That one is live, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that is
live. That one is actually live.
Live streamed, so you can give us crap and there's no filters or censoring. There you go. But with Project Chatter, I think we've evolved since we started in our cars, as Dale mentioned, and we want to evolve continually. So as project teams evolve, we will evolve the podcast, and I'm looking forward to next year.
Hey, here's one for you. We haven't discussed this. Are you open to making a deal with the listeners right
now?
Go
for it. Let's do it.
So how about this? If you as a listener, if you listeners collectively interact more with us, right? So send us banter, send us questions, suggestions, whatever it might be, whether it's through LinkedIn, whether it's through our website, whatever it is, we promise you, Val hasn't even agreed, he doesn't even know what I'm going to say, we promise you to make this podcast bigger and better than it ever has been. That's our promise on our side. And to give you a flavor of what we've done this year, in the first 6 months of this year, we've done over 100,000 downloads in the first 6 months of 2023. We haven't even done the stats for the second half of the year. So for us to top that is enormous, because we celebrated, you remember, Val, when we had 100 followers on LinkedIn?
I do remember, yeah.
So if you're open to making that deal, Val, with the listeners, say now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've actually had some requests from listeners who have said, can you translate it to other languages? And I said, for 2024, anything's possible. Let's do it. Let's go to all the languages. So if you speak another language and that's your preferred mother tongue and you want us to translate the Project Chatter podcast, give us a shout out, get in touch, and we'll see what we can do.
Awesome. So yeah, like, follow, subscribe, whatever you do, interact with us. And we promise to hold up our end of the bargain. There you have it. It's recorded now. It's out in the public domain. You can hold us to it. Val and I are, you can find us on LinkedIn and call us out if we don't hold our end of the bargain. But Val, as we head to the end of this episode, to the end of this season, to the end of this year, what are your final thoughts on this episode?
It's been an amazing journey. 4 years now in the bag. The funny thing is we need to review our own podcast. I mean, for those that don't realize, we actually listen to our own podcast back, which sounds sad, I know. But we have some amazing guests. I just want to thank all the guests again. They spend a lot of time with us, and usually it's ridiculous hours. We spend a lot of time producing in the background. Big shout out to Martin as well, even though he's got COVID. He occasionally is helpful, so we do appreciate him. And just thanking you, Dale, because, you keep us on track and you keep the subject matter alive. I know you're pretty famous in the UK, but I'm sure we all appreciate you down south as well. And thanks for your time in particular.
No, cheers. Appreciate it. And likewise, you know, we don't get too sentimental with each other. We like to give each other shit most of the time. But yeah, thanks for keeping us all on track and sane and pulling us in the various directions behind the scenes. It takes a team to get this out there. And as we said when we started this, this is to pay it forward. We don't do this podcast to make money. We've never done this podcast to be famous. But to remind you of our story, Val and I shared our career journeys about, 10 years ago now when we worked together. And we realized we had some really good people around us in our careers. And we wanted to make that available to you. And so hopefully we've done that, whether it's through one episode, all of the episodes, or a handful of them. Hopefully you've taken something away from that. And if there's only one person that we help per year through what we do, that's enough for us to keep going. So thank you for being awesome. Thank you for tuning in to every episode. Like I say, we're looking to make this bigger and better and badder next year. So with that, I think have a fantastic festive period. And if you're listening to this after the festive period, I hope you've had a fantastic festive period and are rested and recharged and reset. And here's to 2024, I guess. So there we have it, Val. End of this episode. We have no guests to thank, because we've done the thanks to ourselves, but we have the listeners to thank, as always. And remember, do please help us pay it forward and share a link to this episode on your favorite social media. Again, we'll see you in the new year. Have a fantastic time. And from me and Val, it's bye for now.
Project Chatter supports and is a member of Zero Construct. Zero Construct is a new working group that wants to lower carbon construction. Not everyone will be aware, but construction contributes to around 12 to 15% of total carbon emissions.
This is a staggering amount, and we need to reduce it. We are a growing community of people that want to help make this change. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an engineer, contractor, or consultant. You just need to want to make a difference.
Our aim is to grow a network of experts so we can all learn from each other and make a positive impact in the places where we work. We'll do this by sharing knowledge and making it accessible in engaging ways.
To join us and find out more, please visit zeroconstruct.com and register as a member. Thank you, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
For more information, blogs, or to support our charities, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. And if you would like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch via our website.
You can also leave us a voice message via our anchor page and let us know if there's something or someone specific that you would like on the podcast.
Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast
belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.